My next guest is trying to rid the world of math phobia. It's true, human beings seem to be intimidated, if not fully freaked out, by numbers and the high-end world of mathematics. Count me in that bunch. But Dr. Eugenia Cheng has spent her life trying to debunk the degree of difficulty and explain math in ways we can all appreciate, whether it's her New York Times best-selling book, How to Bake Pie, an edible exploration of the mathematics of mathematics, or her lectures across the globe, including her YouTube videos. Cheng continues to make it her life's mission to rid us of our primal fear. You like that? You like the no, didn't work.
Very good.
Pete liked it in there. Dr. Eugenia Cheng is a scientist and resident at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and her new book is called Beyond Infinity, An Expedition to the Outer Limits of Mathematics. Dr. Eugenia Cheng in studio tonight. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's all great to be here.
And this is one of those issues I said at the top, and I was kind of joking with Ro at the crossover, which is math is not my thing. Okay, so one area I just can't do it, but I'm fully intrigued, and I'm committed and curious about this topic tonight.
Well, that's the main thing, to remain curious. What makes me sad is when some people say that it's not their thing and that they stop being curious and that they're afraid of it and they don't want to know anymore. So as long as you're curious, then there's plenty we can do about it.
All right, so let's talk. Why don't we talk about the new book? Let's talk infinity. What I know about infinity and the concept is that's the number to trump all numbers. You really, if you want to put someone in their place, you say infinity.
And now, why would you want to put someone in their place? That's not very nice,
not very
is
nice.
It?
But talk about the concept of infinity. What is infinity?
That's a great question. That's why I wrote a whole book about it. And because even small children can get really fascinated by the concept of this huge thing. And yet, it's really difficult to understand. So you can think of it when you're, 3 or 4 or 5 years old. But mathematicians spent thousands of years trying to understand it because it's actually not as simple as all that. You might think it's the number to trump all numbers. But one of the things I talk about in my book is that there's actually bigger and bigger infinities, and the infinities keep getting bigger and
smaller and smaller too.
And smaller and smaller ones. So you actually can't, if you're trying to put someone in their place, then first of all, that's not very nice. And secondly, you kind of can't because they can put you right back in your place and it will go on like that forever.
Well, I mean, the idea of it, I mean, it's such an interesting concept, infinity, and it really is based on the concept of loops. This idea that it just goes around and around and around.
That is definitely one of my favorite ways that I first thought about and encountered infinity. I tell this story in my book. I grew up in a house that had a chimney in the middle, and all the rooms went around the chimney in a big circle. The idea was that the chimney in the middle would heat the whole house up. But the real point was that it meant that my sister and I could chase each other round and round in circles. And that is so much more fun than chasing around a room just kind of backwards and forwards or round and round a chair or something. We had a real loop, and it felt like we had an infinite house. And I think that is so cool that inside our little house we could have an infinite place to chase each other around. Of course, it was always very funny to turn around spontaneously and chase each other backwards and have hysterics. But to me, that was a first inkling that infinity fits even inside our finite world, which is a very weird concept, and I love weird concepts.
Well, I guess I get that, the concept, and this is where I'm hunkering down in here. But the concept of loops and infinity and running around, like you say in the book about running around the chimney, that to me, I get that concept. But expanding that out to talk about the wonderful world of endless numbers and where it stops or where it doesn't stop, mm-hmm. That's where I feel like I'm with the rest of the world and say, all right, you lost me. But talk about how numbers, there is no end. It continues. And I think that's the part of the book that really kind of grabbed me, this idea that it just never kind of stops.
Yeah. And the numbers go on forever. That's the first inkling we have in infinity. What is the biggest number? Well, there isn't a biggest number, because if there were a biggest number, then we could always add one. And that would make a bigger number, or would it? So you might say, well, infinity plus one is infinity.
Right.
But is it? And one of the things that I talk about is that when mathematicians finally pin down the idea of infinity, they realize that there are different kinds of infinity. And there's one kind where one plus infinity is not the same as infinity plus one. And I like to think this is like what Shakespeare said in The Taming of the Shrew when he talked about forever and a day, because clearly he thought forever and a day was longer than forever. Let's just think about forever. forever and a day. You have to wait through the entire of forever and then another day. That's got to be longer than forever. I'm with Shakespeare on that one.
Well, I mean, at a certain point, do you... I mean, you talked about thousands of years of people studying these numbers. At a certain point, do you start to recognize that the concept of infinity, as we know it, it follows the same logic that numbers do, whole numbers, the idea
well,
that...
Well, it kind of does and it doesn't. And that's the thing you have to be careful about. If you're not careful about it and you think that infinity behaves just like a number, then you very quickly get to deduce that 1 equals 0. And that's not so
right.
great. But you, I mean, it's okay. Right. You're just in the zero world. And the zero world is a thing. It's just not a very, you know, you can't do very much in the zero world. But the fact that numbers don't behave quite like infinity is a first clue that we have to be careful about our gut instincts. And one of the things that I like to say math is, it's about figuring out how to make sense of the things that we think we feel.
Yeah.
And goodness knows it helps if people make sense of it rather than just
yeah.
keeping on going.
Because I think about math and generally it's about, and at its base level, you know, it's about logic, but it's also about counting. The idea that we're always there's this sort of ladder of numbers that go up.
Mm-hmm.
And so infinity would be the idea of it, the top of that, like the logic tells me that you keep going and mm-hmm. keep going and keep going and it never stops.
Uh-huh.
So in your book, talking about how there are different ways that's not necessarily how it works, and that there are different ways infinity is calculated, is where it blows my mind.
Well, you have to start thinking about what numbers are really. And it's one of those things where you start thinking about it and then you realize you don't understand anything. And at that point, I think the world divides into two types of people. People go, oh, come on, we all know what numbers are. This is pointless. I'm going to go and eat my dinner. And people go, oh, this is really cool. And I love optical illusions where you stare at something, you know, those things like there's a picture and there's suddenly some gray dots appear when you wiggle your head or something like that. And to me, that aspect of infinity is the intellectual version of an optical illusion where something weird is going on and I love it and I want to understand why.
It almost is a mystery.
It is a mystery. And I love the fact that there are lots of different ways of explaining it. So a lot of people think that math is just about finding the right answer. But I think it's much more interesting than that. It's about figuring out what answers are possible, depending on what kind of world you decide you're in.
Where were you when I was in high school? I just feel like when we were doing geometry and it was a certain theory and you applied it to a certain thing, I'm like, that's okay. That's the answer.
That's it.
And they're like,
what
could be any answer? And I'm like, this doesn't make any sense to me. I'm going to go somewhere else. The book is called Beyond Infinity, An Expedition to the Outer Limits of Mathematics. In studio, Dr. Eugenia Cheng. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk more about math phobia. Sound good?
Sounds great.
It's Download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Dr. Eugenia Cheng. She is the scientist in residence at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And she's got a new book out called Beyond Infinity, An Expedition to the Outer Limits of Mathematics. She also had the New York Times bestselling book, How to Bake Pi, P-I, of course, the symbol mm-hmm. number. We're talking about mathematics, which is your life. And I mentioned at the top this idea of math phobia. And it is a real thing. I mean, I would think that people even listening to us sort of, you know, battle over the idea mm-hmm. of what it means to find infinity. People are like, I'm out,
okay.
I'm out, right. Talk about math phobia. Is it a real thing?
It is a real thing. And it's been studied by psychology researchers and educationalists. And I fully sympathize with anyone who has math phobia. It's not your fault. This is the beginning of the therapy session. It's not your fault. Everything is against you. I think that the education system is unfortunately placed. I think many people develop the phobia in elementary school, but also it gets passed down from generation to generation.
Yeah.
And I understand that because I have a fear of dogs and it was passed on to me by my mother. She has a fear of dogs and that you pick up on those things, and that's natural. I think that as children we're supposed to be afraid of the things our parents are afraid of. That's how we learn about
right,
the world
right.
So it's okay if you have math phobia. I think that many people get it, and this is one of the things I love about teaching art students at the School of the Art Institute. Many of them have math phobia, but they're very curious because they're really serious art students, so they're very curious about the world. And so we talk about math phobia, and many of them say that they got it. They loved math maybe when they were five in kindergarten, and when it's all about playing with shapes and blocks. And then they got the phobia at that point where they started getting things wrong. And they're told they're wrong and they didn't understand why they were wrong. So it just becomes a kind of scary place where there are strange rules.
Frustrating, yeah.
You don't know when you're going to break one. Someone tells you you're wrong. So of course you would rather go off into a subject where there is no right and wrong, where you write a story and someone says, oh, that's a lovely story. And like, your story is wrong. Your picture is wrong.
There's something to be said about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, the idea that we think of our multiplication tables or division, and you're right, there's an X or it's either right or wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is an area, and when you think about just in elementary schools alone, where it's one of the only types of studies that is like that.
Right. And the thing that's really a shame about it is that when you get to high level math, it's not like that at all. So we're somehow putting everyone off with something that isn't even actually math, because I like to say it would be like having art class where all you do is paint by numbers. And if you don't put the right paint in the right number, then you're wrong. That would be the same kind of thing. And then a whole load of people might grow up thinking, oh, I don't like art. It's not creative. Yeah. It's all about right and wrong. And without realizing that art isn't like that at all, that when you do art, you interpret things and you make your own things up. And it's the same with math, that when you get to a higher level, it's about figuring out what things are possible. It's about possibility, which is the opposite of right and wrong, which is kind of about impossibility.
You've said this, that math is constructing arguments that hold up under logic.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean? I mean, the concept of your, when you say constructing arguments, it kind of flies in the face of what I think of math, because like you just said, math is a rigid sort of, here are the numbers and these numbers add up to mean something and you subtract those numbers and that's the answer. And if it's not the answer that I thought, you made a mistake and that's the wrong answer.
Mm-hmm. There is a part of math that is doing calculations to find answers. But most of math, in my opinion, is more about spotting patterns and building up structures and understanding why things work. So you use logic, which means you're supposed to be able to deduce what things are true by just inherent features about them. So not because of coincidences and not because of feelings and emotions and not because someone had more money than someone else and not because someone was bigger and they beat them up. But none of those things, just through inherent characteristics of things, the way that things are related to each other. So it really gets to the heart of how things work. Now, the trouble is that most things don't work logically. I mean, I don't really work logically. I'm sure you don't work logically. The computer, you know, the air conditioning system doesn't work logically. So we have to do something which is called abstraction, where we forget all the pesky details that prevent things from behaving logically. And that takes us away from the world of objects into the world of ideas. And that move can be one of the things that makes people get the fear, because suddenly you don't feel like you have your feet on the ground.
Right, right.
And a lot of people say to me, oh, I was fine with math until all the numbers became letters. Why did they do that? Oh, I don't like that. And that is an abstraction where the letters are things that could now represent any number. And the thing is, it's really there out of laziness. Mathematicians are really lazy. We don't want to do the same thing over and over again. So when you do an abstraction, you say, I'm going to do an X instead of doing each number separately. And that means I've done all the numbers at once.
Right.
And so really, it's about conservation of brain power. And I think our brains are so precious. It's really important to conserve our brain power and not do things over and over again when we can make a theory that we'll do it once. I think we're like the intellectual versions of people who build gadgets, kind of crazy gadgets.
That's
like,
so interesting.
I don't want to have to cut the top of my boiled egg every day. I'm going to make a gadget. But we'll do it, that kind of thing.
Well, and it makes a lot of sense. And I mean, obviously, if I was told this when I was a freshman in high school or seventh grade, I'd be like, it doesn't make sense. But as an old, you know, 42-year-old, I'm like, it does make sense. The idea that the abstract of putting a letter in place of the number is to say this could be any number. It's all numbers. It's the concept that this is the formula that's going to get us to answering this question. The numbers really don't matter.
And the thing is that numbers are already an abstraction. So it's just that we all did that abstraction so long ago that we've kind of forgotten about it and we take it for granted. But I think it shows that we're all capable of it. And language is already an abstraction. If I say cat, I know we all know that that's referring to some animal that's fluffy with a tail and stuff. But the word cat is an abstract thing that relates to the physical object, which is a cat. And children have to learn how to associate those abstract things with objects. And they also have to learn how to count. And learning how to count doesn't just mean reciting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There's a story I tell in my first book where there was this great mother who also helped at the primary school, the elementary school I was helping with. And she said, all these other mothers, they say their children can count to 20. She said, my son can count to 3. but he knows what three is. And I love that. Because it's actually quite profound.
Yeah, it is profound.
Knowing
yeah.
that the number, that the concept of three refers to three objects, and it could be any three objects. It could be three apples, it could be three cookies, it could be three monkeys. So when you make this the leap from three objects to three, you've done something great. Everyone should pat themselves on the back for being able to make that leap of abstraction right there.
Well, a lot of math as we know it. I mean, I think of this because I think I struggle with, I have a 9-year-old son, and we start to get into mm-hmm. it. But I think a lot of it's about leaps.
Mm-hmm.
There's this you have to trust yourself to go in a certain direction with the problem. Mm-hmm. If it's a word problem or a multiplication, whatever it is, you're trusting yourself to make the leap to go with the or towards the logic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that to me is exciting.
Yeah.
But I can understand the fear. I can understand the idea that I'm going to leap.
You might kind of fall off.
And you might fall.
Yeah. And I think that the other thing is that to understand math, it sort of involves being confused a lot of the time. And you sort of have to be okay with that.
You have to be okay with that, right.
That I'm fine with being confused. I feel like I'm basically confused all the time in life, so it's fine. But I think that if people get the idea that being confused is somehow bad and that they want to know everything definitively, that's funny, because I think they think that in math you're supposed to know everything definitively. And that's not the case at all. It's a great place to be confused. And I just think every time you're confused, it's an opportunity to become more intelligent.
If you're positive about that confusion, mm-hmm. if you let the confusion dip into insecurities or mm-hmm. to anxiety, the idea that, you know, I shouldn't be definitive about this, mm-hmm. then I can see why that's trouble. But you're right. If you let confusion come and you see it as an opportunity to be curious or positive,
mm-hmm.
then, yeah, that's a great learning
and
opportunity.
And you're absolutely right about insecurity, because I see a lot of students who kind of freak out because they get to university level math and suddenly it's not as easy as high school math, and they think that they're really bad at it suddenly because they're feeling way more confused than they ever did in
Because they want to be prepared, because they feel like, I understand that, the idea that they want, high school was to prepare them for college.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to go in and be like, I learned everything on my right hand and now you want me to write left hand.
Right, but in a way, it's often the people who feel fine about math are not necessarily the ones who are better. They're just the ones who don't even realize how confused they are.
The book is Beyond Infinity, An Expedition to the Outer Limits of Mathematics. We're talking with Dr. Eugenia Chang. She's the author. She's also the best-selling author of How to Bake Pie, An Edible Exploration of the Mathematics of Mathematics. She's dedicated her life to math phobia and talking about mathematics and, of course, teaching it. We'll continue the conversation. We'll take a break for tonight's news, and we'll continue the conversation at the big table right after that. Stay with us. Up. It is a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up a little bit later, W. Kamau Bell will be here, the host of CNN's United Shades of America, stand-up comedian who is coming to the Park West on Fridays. He'll be coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. But right now, we continue our conversation here at the big table with Dr. Eugenia Chang. She is the author of Beyond Infinity, An Expedition to the Outer Limits of Mathematics. She's also the best-selling author of How to Bake Pie, P-I, the symbol, An Edible Exploration of the Mathematics of Mathematics. We are talking about math phobia. We are talking about how to better understand an area something that a lot of people, when they've run into trouble mm-hmm. with math, they give up on it.
Yeah.
Or they just say, you know what, this is not for me. And I think everybody understands, including myself, and I'm right in this category, that yes, it's the building blocks of engineering and how everything comes together. You use mm-hmm. math to make this wondrous world that we live in. But somebody else can do that.
Right. Right. So everyone kind of knows that math is important to engineering and science.
Right.
And then you can just go, oh, well, I'm not going to be an engineer or a scientist, so I don't need to know any of that stuff. Right?
Right.
I mean, kind of, in the sense that, yeah, you probably don't need to solve equations or be able to do calculus or be able to do things like prove things in geometry, though, or do trigonometry or all that stuff that they make you do
at school.
Don't
get me started, yeah.
And yet, math is important beyond those things, because it's not just about solving specific problems in life. It's about thinking clearly. And doesn't everyone want to be able to think more clearly? I think that math and logical thinking should be, at the core of all the thinking that we do, which is like going to the gym and doing exercises that strengthen your physical core. It's not that anything we do in life just uses our core,
right.
But having a strong physical core means that we have better access to the rest of our muscles in our body.
Are you suggesting I get my old Algebra 2 book out and I do the problems in there to be
a
better critical thinker?
I am not suggesting that, because I don't actually think that the kind of math in the usual curriculum is quite right. And that's one of the reasons that I started writing books, because I wanted to show the kind of math that I think is relevant. And to make good on this belief, that I started teaching it to art students at the School of the Art Institute. Now, these are art students. They are not going to be engineers or scientists. I'm not trying to turn them into research mathematicians. So this is really for people who are interested in thinking about the world. And Okay, so some people aren't interested in thinking about the world. Fine, then maybe you don't need to be able to think more clearly. But math is about using your brain in a particular way. And there are so many different ways to use our brain. Math is just one of them. But I think it's a really central one, because math is, in fact, everywhere. There is math in everything. And you might say that you can get by. People say to me, I get by perfectly fine without math. It's all right. And I say, yeah, but I get by better.
There's a charm in that, of course. I guess I see that. And what you've been talking about in this hour is just about giving us a better understanding of what math is. This idea of logic, or trying to get to logic, and trying to argue and think critically about the concepts that are in front of us. It's not just about pulling out the calculator and mm-hmm. seeing what the multiplications are. Mm-hmm. Is that a different thread or a different area than what we learn in schools? Is schools a different kind of math?
I think that what we learn in school is trying to train people in how to think clearly, but it's failing dismally, dare I say it. There are some fantastic math teachers who are doing a really great job of getting people excited. But unfortunately, there's all this pressure on teachers to get students through standardized tests. And that pressure to hit those targets on standardized tests means that everyone ends up sort of feeling a pressure to teach to the test. And it's not the teacher's fault at all. It's really the system. And it takes more creativity and a bit more resources and a bit more trust in teachers to teach students how to think, and not just how to produce answers to predetermined questions.
I feel like that is how I knew math. Mm-hmm. I knew math by trying to get to a predetermined mm-hmm. answer, and I needed to figure out the formula to get there. And when I was done, oh, good, mm-hmm. I could go to reading. I go somewhere
but
else.
But it really is possible to encourage and train people to think logically without just saying, okay, do this problem set, solve this problem that you're not interested in the slightest. Solve this problem about triangles. Who cares about triangles? Actually, I find triangles quite interesting. But if you don't care about triangles, then you're never going to care about all those things with triangles. But, for example, this weekend, I did an event with Math Circles of Chicago, and they're a fantastic organization that aims to bring more interesting math, especially to children who don't have access necessarily to all the resources that other schools have. And they did a thing called the Julia Robinson Math Festival, which is where we just went into, it was at Walter Payne College, and we just set up tables with activities. And nothing had a particular aim. It was just kind of exploring some math. So I did one where we just got a bunch of shapes out of card. We had tons of card and tape and scissors, and everyone was just invited to cut shapes out and stick them together. And children of all ages, from 3 to adults, just got really excited about seeing what you can build using shapes. And
there
was no wrong answer. And one parent came up to me and said, what's the aim here? What are we supposed to do? I'm like, you can do anything you want.
Well, I mean, I think that there, as you mentioned, I mean, the curriculum side of standardized testing, I think that also goes a little bit to parents mm-hmm. in the way that we look at our kids and we say, you're not understanding that, then you're gonna have a tough time in school if you don't understand this base problem. You don't understand how to to do this multiplication or division.
And it's true that the math curriculum, unfortunately, is built up cumulatively, so that if you don't understand the thing before it, you're kind of doomed to not understand the thing after it. And that's another reason people get really put off. And yet, I've taught high-level abstract math to art students, some of whom cannot do multiplication. They certainly can't do division. And yet I show them things that you usually do when you're doing a PhD in abstract math. And so we're kind of making people jump through hoops to, in order to get to do something that has nothing to do with jumping through hoops.
Where does this enthusiasm come from, Dr. Cheng? I mean, for you, you've dedicated your life to teaching art students or teaching people who may not know much about math or or going after the idea of the dreaded math phobia. Mm-hmm. Where does this come from? I mean, why not just be a research mathematician and hang out with mathematicians and say, we are the smartest people in the world? And
I'm glad you asked that, because I have had a slightly unusual career. I was a tenured math professor in the UK, and I quit that, which is quite unusual, because I wanted to dedicate my life to reaching more people. And I strongly believe that if you have some skills, it's really important to use them to the best possible ability to help the world in the way that you can. And yeah, I could have carried on doing research, and I still do research, but I think that there aren't that many research mathematicians who are capable of explaining it to
are going to go to YouTube or
who care about it or who enjoy it. And because I enjoy doing it, I care about it, and people say that I am good at it, or that I'm able to explain things to them, I felt like it was more important for the world for me to do that, that that was a more important contribution than just carrying on teaching math majors inside a university. Because I thought, you know what, if I don't teach this calculus class, someone else is going to teach this calculus class. But if I don't go and spread the love of math around the world, who's doing it? There are people doing it, but there aren't enough people doing it. And so I thought it was more important for me to do that than teach calculus again.
Well, I mean, another part of your background in your bio is that you are a musician, and you hear about music being similar to math in the way that you have to know the notes and there are structures that you can put together, but at the same time, you can be confused and find something new that comes out of it. Talk about the relationship between music and being a musician and math.
Well, first, I'd like to say that it's not just about things like counting. Sometimes people say, oh, yeah, you have to count the beats. And it's not about that, because math isn't about numbers any more than music is just about counting beats. I do love the structures inside music and the harmony and the way it fits together. And I love music that has really interesting harmony underneath it, because that to me is like logical structures that fit together. But I also love it when, like you say, you're confused, when you don't understand why a piece of music makes you feel so much. And I love analyzing and trying to understand. Well, I love trying to understand everything, and that's fundamentally why I'm a mathematician. But I love trying to understand why a piece of music makes me cry. And my friends will laugh at me, because lots of pieces of music make me cry. But I enjoy the fact that beyond a certain point, you can't explain it anymore.
Yeah,
so you can explain and explain and explain, and then you run out of explanation. And to me, that point where you run out of explanation is magical, because you've got to the end of the explanation and there's still something else. And I think that's part of what we're talking about, being confused. And in math, it's the same. I love the fact that there are all these things we can explain and then something that we can't. And I sort of enjoy living in that boundary area just in between where you can and can't.
Well, I mean, I automatically would think that math is logic, and I would think it's not emotion, meaning that the part you're talking about, the tears or crying on a piece of music, that's emotion. That's going to be something that defies logic. That's partially why we have an emotional response to it. Am I wrong in that thought, the thought that math is not emotional, that it's logic?
I think that there's an arbitrary boundary that we're constructing between logic and emotions. And I think that's unhelpful. And it's similar to the arbitrary boundary we construct between science and art, which is also unhelpful. These are artificial boundaries that we put because we're desperately trying to pigeonhole the world into.
We want to make sense of it,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. But in fact, logic and emotions go together. And logic is how we kind of test to see whether things are true, but emotion is how we feel that things are true, and those things should go together. We needn't pit them against each other, I think. And at the moment, I got really excited this week because I made some actual progress in my research. Amazing. But I got so excited that my pulse started racing. Honestly, I had to take deep breaths and calm down because I was so excited. I had to jump up and down. I mean, I get that excited when something starts coming together, because you feel like you've been hacking your way through a jungle with a machete or something, or that you're wandering through fog and there's just fog everywhere. And then it's as if the fog starts to clear and a ray of sunshine starts just edging through. The joy of seeing sunshine, like now we've got sunshine after however many months of winter, when that first ray of sunshine comes through, that's how exciting it is to understand something in mathematics. And that's the kind of joy I want to share with people.
Do you feel that joy is that it's shared? Meaning, I think of times when I got a good grade in my math because I figured out a program. I don't know if I ever thought of a ray of light. I thought, great, I'm going to get a B.
Because it was the grade, right? It was the grade that you were after. Where I've done some projects with my art students where we're trying to find structures inside things that you might not think of as exciting at all, like factors of numbers. No one's ever found those interesting until I show them these amazing geometric structures you can find inside factors of numbers. And when they figure it out, they get so excited and you hear actual screams of delight. And or one student said, mind blown. Or they go, oh my goodness, I can't believe it. I mean, I love being able to get that excitement response from math.
I don't know how much. I mean, I'd love to hear that response, figuring out a math problem or discovering something, because that's something I don't necessarily think of when I think of discovering, you know, or getting a math problem.
So
or
those are the things I want to show more people. So when I give public talks, I show some of my favorite math structures and reveal them and try and show. Build up the excitement around them. And the thing I'm always aiming for is to get that from the audience collectively. And if I get that, I think I've touched some people and maybe they can start being open to the fact that there's that in math, just like there's that in music and there's that in art and poetry and food. You know, when you eat some food that's so delicious, you practically want to cry. Well, I cry quite easily, but...
Well, I guess it comes to this idea of some sort of archetype or stereotype of people who are into math.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's mathematicians or it's students who are good at math, they're nerdy.
Yeah.
And this concept of, you know, that you really like numbers, so you're socially awkward.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know, I can go on and on about the sort of construct that we've created around people who enjoy math.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that our society sort of does that to people who dig math?
I think it's partly a defense mechanism. So you're not good at something, a bunch of people aren't good at something, so they go, well, it's not cool to be good at that anyway. I'm going to be the cool people. I'm going to be the cool people who hang out, you know, and do something else. You know, those are the sad people who don't have any friends who have to go and do math. And that's another reason why I thought it was important for me to reach a more general public, because I want to buck that trend and show that you don't have to be some weirdo. I mean, okay, maybe you think I'm a weirdo, but I hope that I don't fit all those stereotypes, and to show that you don't have to be socially awkward. You can have friends and be a mathematician, and that you don't have to look like the kinds of weird mathematicians who are usually portrayed by the media.
You do not have tape on your glasses.
It's true. I don't. Quick check. No, I really don't.
I mean, I think from this conversation, the one thing I do take away from it, and you know, as someone who falls into the category of having math phobia, is that when faced with confusion in my life,
mm-hmm.
and I don't it doesn't have to be just about math, it could be about mm-hmm. anything, but when faced with confusion, instead of running away from mm-hmm. it or trying quickly to find clarity,
mm-hmm.
that I embrace the positivity of that opportunity mm-hmm. to solve a mystery or to solve or to find that clarity.
Yeah, and I really think that math, being a mathematician for me, is a bit like being a black belt karate in brain, because I feel like I can get my brain to do anything, and that I can understand anything. And if I were a black belt in karate, I would feel much safer walking up the street late at night, for example. But as it is, I feel completely safe walking into any intellectual territory, and I feel like I can understand anything. And that includes other people, actually. It's not usually, people don't usually think of math as being something that helps you understand people. But for me, it's because I know how to break everything down extremely logically and find what causes what, even if the person isn't themselves logical necessarily, or we don't think they're logical, there's still some reason that people think the things they do. And I always want to find those reasons. And when there are disagreements in the world, as there unfortunately often are, I think it's so important to find connections with people rather than just push everyone further apart. And for me, being able to think logically means that I can find those connections because I can understand what the root is of what people are thinking.
The book is called Beyond Infinity, An Expedition to the Outer Limits of Mathematics. Dr. Eugenia Cheng is a scientist in residence at the School of the Art Institute right here in Chicago. And she's also the best-selling author of How to Bake Pie, An Edible Exploration of the Mathematics of Mathematics. Dr. Cheng, thanks so much for being my guest, and thank you for enlightening us in the world of math.
Thank you for your curiosity.